on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Tuesday, October 1st, 2024 edition, and that means we are officially into the fourth quarter, three quarters behind us, just one more to go. We are down the final stretch of the year, and it was a interesting first three quarters and an even more interesting start to this quarter with obviously more geopolitical tensions ramping up in the Middle East. And that's had some ramifications for the market as a whole. And we also head into election season, just a handful of weeks away. And that is going to be top of mind for a lot of people, especially markets participants who will handicap the eventual outcome and the policies that not just that are discussed, because a lot of candidates say certain things on the campaign trail, but you have to remember that the vast majority of those things don't go through. They aren't put in place. And if they are, it's a largely watered down version of what they speak about, mainly because the president is one person and it's one branch of government. And there are others, mainly Congress, that will help decide most of those details. So, you know, a lot of times you have to take what the candidates say with a grain of salt, because the main question for you and other investors is, you know, what is likely to come to pass as opposed to what is just said. You know, talk is cheap, right? And so as we go down this final stretch, make sure you understand that. In addition, you know, like I said, the Middle East is ramping up, and I don't think it's a good thing for anybody. And we will see what type of reverberations that has in markets, and certainly had that today. And we will discuss that in a little bit. Now, just a reminder that coming up 1 week from today, so yeah, less than a week, we are hosting our new Invest Talk Wealth webinar. It is free and it's on effective strategies for managing your 401k or workplace retirement account and enhancing your retirement savings. Once again, it's 1 week away, October 8th at 11 a.m. Pacific time. Just head over to investtalk.com and sign up for our wealth webinar. And it would be great if you could let your friends know about it as well. Now, in just a little bit, we are going to talk about today's market performance, run down the show topics, but first, let's tackle this caller question now.
Hello, guys. I own Tutor Perini, symbol TPC. This stock is its all-time high, and I'm thinking about selling all of it. I'm up 130%. What do you guys think? Does this stock have any more room to go up, or is this the time for me to sell it all and move on to something else? Thank you.
All right. Looking at TPC, this is Tutor Perini Corp. And they are out of, remember correctly, here in California. And what they do is they provide general contracting, construction management, and design building services to private and public customers. And it's mainly about transportation infrastructure, water treatment facilities, and different types of buildings. So they are in the right space. They provide site work, concrete forming, steel erection, electrical, mechanical, heating, HVAC systems, etc. So I like the type of business that this is in. And earnings were negative last year and the year before, but they're supposed to make nearly a dollar this year and $1.75 next year. Now, based on that, at $26.53, if they do make $1.75 next year, you know, that's not too bad. You know, it's a reasonable mid-teens multiple on this name. Once again, not too bad. No dividend yield though. And let me see their balance sheet. Yeah, a little bit of debt in the balance sheet, but nothing too crazy. Yeah, I do see kind of a mixed bag here when it comes to the profitability. You do have negative free cash flow, but once again, negative return equity, but that's because they're losing money. But their free cash flow has been positive since the second quarter of 2022, and it's at an all-time high. So I tend to look at the free cash flow number a lot more than that return equity, especially when you're looking forward and you're seeing better profitability. So here's what I would say. I would trim it. This is something that a lot of investors don't consider. They don't consider that, hey, it's not all or nothing. It's not sell it all or hold on to it all. It can be trim it back. You're doubled your money and then some. It's probably a much higher weighting in your portfolio than it was when you first bought it. And maybe trimming it back to that original target and having a trailing stop is the likely way to go because the momentum is still up. Yes, it's waning a bit, but as long as the market continues to move higher and spending within this space is robust, this can continue up. So I would use the 50-day moving average as your out and trim it from here. But I wouldn't sell it all because the momentum is still positive. Thanks for the call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So I get through and ask your question on today's show. And we have about 45 minutes left, which means we have a lot of topics to discuss. Our main focus point is about the global economy and what global economists are expecting for economic growth, for inflation, what challenges there will be with that economic growth, and not just here in the United States, but around the world. So we will look at this World Economic Forum report and see how at least my views align with theirs. Okay. We also have other topics on the docket. One is in regards to China. China just pulled out the bazooka and stimulated their equity markets. But what does that mean for the actual real economy? And are they at risk of falling into a Japanese style long deflationary malaise, which Japan was in for a couple decades, right? And so we'll look at that story. Also, CDs. A lot of people try to lock in high rates on CDs recently, but there is a bit of a catch for many of them. And I want to talk about this because many people think that CDs are straightforward and oftentimes they can be more complex than you realize. So we're going to look at that story as well. But we're also going to get to your voice bank questions. One is on Sencora and then Barrick Gold, G-O-L-D. And we also have some questions submitted via the comments section over on our YouTube channel as well. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions right now at 888-99-CHART. Now we're going into a short break, and on the other side, I'll touch on today's market activity briefly, and then play more of your questions here on InvestTalk.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
Well, I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
Looking at Dominion Energy, Inc., does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART. This is Invest Talk now with 59 million downloads. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch Invest Talk on our YouTube channel. And they can leave their finance and investment questions anytime on 888-99-CHART.
Now let's take a quick look at the market today. It was certainly a negative day overall. You had the NASDAQ down, where are we here? There we go. Down 278 points. Definitely the weakest here. An interesting day because large cap growth and small cap value were pretty much down equally, about 1.5%. Large cap value did the best, pretty much tread water. It was only down 13 basis points there. But, this was really all sparked mainly by the geopolitical tensions in the Middle East. And that certainly was a spark that was a bit expected, but overall just kind of threw a wrench in market expectations. You had energy move higher on this news. And that's probably why that large cap value side was a bit stronger there. If you look at some of the big winners, United Natural Foods up 30%. And you continue to have some strength out of China as well, despite the geopolitical tensions. Humana was down nearly 12%. Plug Power down 8%. Supermicro down about 2.5%. NVIDIA down 3.6%. Intel down 3.33% there. Apple down nearly 3%. Palantir about 2% down, and Rivian down 7%, along with Lucid at negative 7.5% as well. So those were the big movers on the day. And we continue to get ramps up in escalation from Israel and Iran. Iran launching attacks, ballistic missiles into Israel, and certainly a contentious situation. And markets are starting to wake up a bit to it. I've said this for a little bit, that between late August and the election was a period of elevated risk for a market pullback due to liquidity situation, the election, and obviously the geopolitical tensions in the Middle East and in Eastern Europe. And so we're seeing the geopolitical tensions in the Middle East start to really rise, and that is a catalyst. And when you get a catalyst with lower liquidity, that can create a bit of a market pullback. And we've got the start of that today. We'll see if we have any follow through tomorrow. All right. Now, we've been telling your friends that our InvestTalk audio podcast is available in video form, and that is over on YouTube. And we get questions submitted via the comment section, and let's get to one of those now. Lynn Dye says, is it okay, tax-wise, to do a transfer from my husband's regular IRA to my Roth IRA? We have multiple accounts at the same brokerage firm, and it's easy to transfer either specific stock or cash from one account to another. The simple answer is no. IRAs are for one person and one person only. Now, you can move money from your regular IRA to your Roth IRA, that is called a Roth conversion, but it has to be your IRA and your Roth, just like it has to be your husband's IRA into his Roth as well. So there's no combination Roth. You can't move money from one person's IRA of any type to another person's IRA of any type. Okay? It doesn't work like that. One person only. That's it. Okay? So I know it feels nice. You know, we would love to do that. Just consolidate everyone's money into one type of account and have a nice, safe, simple tax efficiency. That'd be great. But no, that's not how this works. You have to make sure that it is one person and one person only. Now, here's another question from our InvestTalk YouTube channel. John 11174 says, what do you think about Novo Nordisk, ticker NVO? And this is Ozempic, right? This is has been a big, big run over the past couple of years. Let's call it year, since the business has been booming with Ozempic. They earned $1.59 in 2021, $1.76 in 2022, but last year earnings were up 57% to $2.76, up to $3.39 to this year, and it's supposed to be $4.26 next year. Here's my problem. I've seen this before. Diet drugs are always a fad. They get popular, and then the side effects happen. You can't replace good diet and exercise. Yes, it helps people lose weight, and in certain sub categories of people, it's probably very helpful. But you know, they're giving them out to almost everybody, and there are so many side effects, especially GI problems that it creates, and then you lose most of the weight. 70% roughly is muscle, and that has longer term impacts. And so, yes, it can be very helpful for a certain subset of people, but it's overprescribed now. And I think it will correct itself. And the stock is already starting to correct itself down from 145 to 118. The momentum is fading, and I would not chase it here. I think there's a lot more downside to go for Novo Nordisk. All right, we're heading into a break, but I'm ready to take your calls now at 888-99-CHART.
The newest InvestTalk Wealth webinar is happening online and free soon. The InvestTalk Wealth webinar will focus on effective strategies for managing your 401k and enhancing your retirement savings. Go to investtalk.com and sign up for our upcoming wealth webinar, October 8th.
Now, our main focus point today is about the global economy and its stabilization amidst many challenges. And this is a latest report from the World Economic Forum. And it's about the global economic outlook stabilizing. And what they found was the majority of chief economists saw, that's 54%, expect the conditions of the global economy to remain unchanged over the next year. So, you know, not great growth, but relative stability. And, you know, that can be viewed as a good thing or a bad thing. Overall, though, the economy is at relatively low growth. And a big part of that is China, right? China has been a driver of global growth for a couple of decades. And the fact that they are now converging much lower in growth compared to where they were, you know, a couple of decades ago, that is a general overall drag on the overall economic growth. And so now you could say, well, China's growth was unsustainable, and there's some issues with that, which we'll talk about. But you know, overall stability seems to be the name of the game. And what the chief economist outlook surveyed leading economists from across industries and international organizations. So this is a pretty broad list of those looking at the broader economy, and they see high debt levels a challenge to new growth agenda. And they also see it clashing with the desire to make growth less damaging to the overall environment. For example, China's a good example of this. They made solar cells for a long time, and they did it in a very dirty manner by using electricity that was derived from coal. And so they've kind of weaned off that, and they're investing in green energy and mainly nuclear energy. And so that is changing. So that's one small example of, hey, we want economic growth. We want to do it in a more environmentally friendly manner. Now, public debt overall is a burden in both advanced and developing economies. So that's kind of the new thing, is that it used to be the developing economies were the ones that typically had the balance sheet issues. But now it's really worldwide, okay? And these rising debt services costs will crimp the ability for many countries to deal with any potential problems, right? And about 40% of these economists expect defaults to rise in developing economies over the next year. So basically saying that you're likely to see some of those third world countries go into a default in some way, shape or form. Okay. And there are many challenges to the continued growth, such as the energy transition, demographic shifts. We've talked about that in China and Japan and even in Europe, where demographics in general just make it harder to grow because, you know, young people are the lifeblood of economies. And if the amount of young people are not increasing, then that becomes a challenge because those older people are a drag on efficiency in the economy, and they take up a lot of medical resources, and they just don't have the energy to create a lot of economic growth. So demographic issues are an issue. And then climate-related disasters, we've seen that just recently here in the U.S., rapid technological change, think of AI, how much is that going to disrupt current economic trajectories and help it, right? It's just a shift in demand within industries. And then national security needs. We've seen that right now with geopolitical concerns continuing to ramp up. Now, from a regional perspective, almost 9 out of 10 expect moderate or better growth this year in the United States. And 8 out of 10 agree that the election results will have a significant impact on economic policy, both here and abroad. Okay. Now, in Europe, it looks like things are turning a bit better. Okay. Chief economists are modestly optimistic that conditions will improve in Europe. Almost twice as many, 53%, expect moderate or better growth next year than they did this year, only 29%. So they're seeing some acceleration in Europe. That's a positive. South Asia is the standout winner here when it comes to broader economic growth, but once again, continued weakness in China. Latin America and the Caribbean look to surpass global growth averages. So those industries or those set parts of the economy look to see some growth. Now, on the inflation front, a lot of economists see things getting better really worldwide. So that's one positive, and that will help the global central banks continue to inflect into a more accommodative stance. And I think that is that's certainly a positive for liquidity and the ability for banks to lend and drive economic growth there. And so really right now, it's a steady state, but a lot of risks on the horizon, but also the potential based on easing of policy to get growth to reaccelerate in many parts of the world. So that's where we're at. A lot, it's not hell in the handbasket, but it's also not robust out there either. So pockets of strength and pockets of stagnation as well. Okay. Now, our main focus point, we're moving to a break, but I'd love to get to your live calls. So give me a call now at 888-99-SHARP. Have you heard about Prize Picks? Prize Picks is America's number one daily fantasy sports app with over 5 million active members. Prize Picks is the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. All you do is pick more or less on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. Prize Picks is the only real money daily fantasy platform with an injury insurance policy so that your lineups stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. That's right. If your player leaves in the first half and doesn't return, your Prize Picks still live. And this is good. Prize Picks puts their members first, so all withdrawals are safe, fast, and secure. When my picks hit, I can get my money in as quick as 15 minutes. Prize Picks invented the flex play, which means you can still cash out if your lineup isn't perfect. You can double your money even if one of your picks doesn't hit. I've been playing Prize Picks recently, and I have no idea why I waited so long. So download the Prize Picks app today. Use code INVEST and get $50 instantly when you play $5. That's code INVEST on Prize Picks to get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It's guaranteed. Prize Picks. Run your game. Prize Picks is a skill-based fantasy game. Go to prizepicks.com now.
You've got finance and investment questions, and Justin Klein is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, InvestTalk. This is Jose from Brooklyn. I'm calling about a stock. Yesterday, you spoke about a stock called McKesson. You indicated it was a solid company. I was comparing another company, similar sector, since Cora, C-O-R. I was looking to add one of these companies to my portfolio. Sensora seems to have a pretty solid balance sheet. And I was wondering, what's your take on the company? Which one to add to my portfolio? I wait for your answer. Thank you for your time and your investment advice.
All right. Looking at Sencora, C-O-R is a symbol, and they're one of the three domestic leading pharmaceutical wholesalers. So it distributes branded, generic, and specialty pharmacy products. And they are, along with McKesson and Cardinal Health, pretty much the whole pharmaceutical industry when it comes to these wholesalers. And so you're right, there is some overlap in the type of business that they have. The issue is that McKesson is a lot broader, right? It's not just focusing on pharmacy distribution, but also medical products. Think of syringes and gauze and things like that. And so McKesson is just a broader company, a more diversified company, more diversified revenue stream. And now Sencora is good, right? Good business. Return on invested capital is 31%. Free cash flows of nearly $4 billion on a $45 billion enterprise value. So that's pretty solid as well. But the momentum certainly has been waning as of late. It's been down since its high in April. It was around nearly $250 per share. Now we're down to $224. So it's been just kind of in a 10% trading range since then. Could just be consolidation. But if I look at McKesson, you know, it is down a bit more recently, but generally it's in more of an uptrend. And so I would rather own McKesson because of its larger diversification within its business. It's a bit bigger and, you know, similar type of valuation based on forward-looking earnings guidance. So I think Sencora is fine, but I still would prefer McKesson over Sencora. Now, this is Invest Talk. Let's make this two in a row now, and then I will follow up with one of my talking points.
Hey, guys. This is Nick from Seattle. I'm calling about stocks that are in the insurance sector. There are two stocks that I'm kind of focusing in on here. One is Brown & Brown, ticker symbol BRO. The other one is Willis Tower Wilson, WTW. I'm comparing these two, and I'm kind of favoring Brown & Brown for an investment pick. But both companies are very similar market caps, fairly similar fundamentals and valuations. So looking to get kind of your opinion on if one's better than the other or if I'm kind of looking in the wrong place with these two companies. Thanks. I look forward to hearing your opinions on the program.
All right, looking at Brown & Brown, BRO is a symbol, and Willis Tower Watson, WTW, both in the insurance space. Now, Willis Towers Watson is a global advisory insurance brokerage and solution company, while Brown & Brown is more of a pure insurance agency and broker, mainly focusing on property and casualty, employer benefits, etc. Similar market cap here, around $30 billion, and they both pay a dividend. Yeah, both pay a dividend, but not much, you know, around 1% or so. And if I'm looking at one versus the other, Brown & Brown certainly has better momentum. Relative strength is 90 versus Watson is 85, but still, you know, both are good. Earnings expectations, though, for Willis Towers Watson is trending lower, whereas Brown & Brown is trending higher. So I kind of like that growth there a bit better. So I would go with BRO, frankly. I just like that earnings momentum. I like analysts that are upgrading earnings expectations. Their profitability is still very good, 17% on return on equity versus 11% for WTW. So I like the areas you're looking at. I just like Brown & Brown a bit better than Willis Towers Watson. Thanks for the call. Now let's touch a bit on China. And, you know, we had this big bazooka last week that China unleashed to really support their equity markets. And a lot of people are getting excited about this and say, okay, this could be something that would spin the Chinese economy back into solid economic growth. And I think the simple answer to all this is not really, because there's so many parallels to China and to Japan in the late 80s, early 90s, when they were dealing with their property bust as well. They had a very similar economic trajectory. You know, Japan was buying up real estate here in the U.S., and they were going to take over the world when it came to manufacturing. And then obviously China in the 90s really rose to prominence, late 90s into the early 2000s. And they also had a property bubble, debt-fueled bubble, like Japan. And so what you're seeing here is the deflationary bust that Japan dealt with many decades ago. And China's GDP growth is decelerating by 6 percentage points from 10% per year from 1980 to 2010 to about 4% over the next 5 years. Very similar to what Japan did, 7.25% from 1946 to 1990, down to just 0.8% growth from 91 to 2023. So very similar type, right? Obviously, China had a little bit higher baseline growth, but that drop in growth, very, very similar. Now, there's something called the three arrows problem. And this was coined by Shinzo Abe in Japan. And it was this prescription for how to get Japan out of their problems. And now Japan is kind of working through, has worked through a lot of those issues, still has demographic issues and still has problems. But, you know, they're getting a bit better economic growth. But what he talked about were the three arrows, and that was monetary, fiscal, and structural, saying that if you deploy strong fiscal and strong monetary stimulus, that you can create an escape velocity that will, combined with structural reforms, really spin the economy out of the doldrums. And Japan tried this for many years, and once again, they're succeeding a bit, but it took many decades to kind of get here and get out from underneath a lot of the bad debt that was built up during the 80s. And so despite this big rally in Chinese stocks, if you compare it to what happened in like the Nikkei, right, Nikkei 225, this looks very similar, right? The Nikkei 225 bounced four times by on average 34% from 1989 to September of 1998. And during that time, despite bouncing, once again, four times, on average 34%, big moves, over that time period, nearly a decade, the Nikkei fell by 66% in total. So yes, stimulus, especially ones targeted in equities, can give you a quick and sudden boost. But until these structural problems are fixed, it's probably not going to really change the trajectory of the Chinese economy. Okay. And Beijing is a bit worried about spending a ton of money, right? That's why this is more about lending to entities that can help support the stock market as opposed to actually spending in the real economy, because they just don't really have a lot of places to do that without reigniting a housing bubble that they don't want to continue to inflate, I think. And main reason is because the Chinese debt to GDP is at 85% as of earlier this year. And that's three times the level that it was back during the financial crisis in 2009. So there's not as much fiscal room for them to do this. And from a structural perspective, they have a lot of challenges. Number one, we talked about many times, demographics. Over the next 25 years, population is likely to shrink by about half. And then you have productivity, that growth that's certainly slowing after many years of growth. And then underconsumption, right? There's not a lot of social safety net there. And so people save, and they save to make sure that they don't run out of money to pay for, housing and medical expenses, etc. So it's hard to get the average person to go out there and spend when they don't have that social safety net. And so it's very tempting to think that, the market's moved a lot, this has to mean something. And, I think at best, it's it's premature. At worst, it's a complete false narrative that this is going to do much for the real economy. So it's really a wait and see at this point. But if you look at the structural problems in China, they mirror a lot with Japan. And you know how long it took to get them out of that quagmire, a lot longer than most people expect. Okay. Now, InvestTalk has now achieved in excess of 59 million downloads. And that's all thanks to you. And our work continues in 30 seconds. So hang on.
Here's a quick reminder. The newest InvestTalk Wealth webinar is happening soon. Tuesday, October 8th at 11 a.m. Pacific Time. The InvestTalk Wealth webinar will focus on effective strategies for managing your 401k and enhancing your retirement savings. Go to investtalk.com and sign up for our upcoming Wealth webinar, October 8th. It's free to attend, but you must pre-register. And please tell your friends.
Hi, Justin and Luke. Could you comment on Barrick Gold, ticker symbol G-O-L-D? I'm interested in buying more shares to hold, but I've been watching the stock price rise. Is it a good mining stock to buy or too expensive? Could you please give me your opinion? I'll be listening for your answers. Thanks.
All right, look at Barrick Gold, and it is one of the largest gold miners out there, $35 billion market cap, and we own this for clients. So simple answer is yes, we like it. The earnings for this year are supposed to be up 52% to $1.27, and then $1.74 next year, and those estimates continue to move higher. We had some good earnings reports as of late, and you know, if you look at forward-looking earnings, you're talking about low teens multiple with strong growth, especially if gold continues to march higher, which we've talked about the demand out of the East. And I think still a lot of dry powder left for investors here domestically to chase gold higher. And I think that is happening to a degree. And so I think you could see gold at 3,000 an ounce in the next 12 to 18 months. And obviously the miners would benefit from that. Now, GOLD, Barrick, is a bit different than a lot of the gold miners, A, because it's large, but also does have some copper exposure as well, which we also like. We also like copper. So I like that bit of a diversity there. And, you know, I think it is a relatively undervalued miner. And so this is, if you're looking at some of the gold miners, this is one of the better ones to buy out there. And obviously, we own it. So thanks for the call. Now, let's touch a little bit on CDs. And it's interesting. You know, the Fed has started to cut rates. And to potentially lock in rates, lock in high yields, a lot of investors have bought CDs, especially for buying them from Fidelity or Schwab, one of the big brokers out there. And what a lot of people don't know is that usually the highest yielding CDs that are out there have what is called a call feature, which means that before they mature, the bank can give you your money back and stop paying you that yield. That's basically what it is. And a lot of people don't know that. They just look at that yield and they think, oh, 5%, 5.5%, whatever it is, that sounds nice and juicy, but they're not looking at the fine print. They're not understanding that they're purchasing callable CDs. So they don't really know what they're signing up for. And many of them are surprised when it is called away from them, okay? And so investors are going to have to reinvest that cash when they're called away now at lower rates. That's why these banks are calling them away, is because those rates are lower, and then go borrow money at cheaper rates. The average 12-month CD on bankrate.com right now is only 4.8%. And so after the Fed rate cut of 50 basis points, rates have come down. Now, most CDs aren't callable, so understand that. But ones that are typically offer the highest rates. And advertised yields on callable CDs tend to be about 0.4% higher than the non-callable ones with the same duration. And once again, these are typically sold through Fidelity, Schwab, and about 18% of CDs bought and sold through Fidelity this year were callable in some way, shape, or form. And so you know, the amount of money poured in, $650 billion into brokered CDs since rates started to rise in 2022. And so there's just a lot of potential for these rates to these CDs to be called away. So I highlight this because it's always important. I stress this time and time again, which is know what you own. Don't just look at the headline. Don't just look at the name of a mutual fund or an ETF and think that's exactly what you're getting. Look at the underlying holdings. Look at the features of the particular product that you're buying. Whether it's a CD, it could be a bond as well. Bonds can be called away on top of that. And so this isn't just a CD thing. This could be a corporate bond issue that you are looking for that juicy yield. That's why a lot of times you want to look at yield to worst as opposed to yield to maturity. That can help you understand what is the worst case scenario. If it does get called away, what is my worst yield I would be getting? And so that's why yield to worst tends to be a much better way to look at these figures as opposed to yield to maturity or APR or dividend rate, okay? Now, this is Best Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal each and every weekday, and that's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, both Luke and I love your live calls. So let's talk with Sid in North Carolina, looking at Humana.
Hi, Justin. Good evening. Thank you for your time.
Of course.
This one and United both are in my radar for quite some time. Mm-hmm. But I looked at Humana today, got down by 12%. And I'm not sure this is a good entry point. If you have some thoughts around this one, I'm more than happy to take your inputs. And thank you so much once again.
Yeah, well, Humana's down big, along with Cigna. And it looks like lawmakers are criticizing new anti-competitive moves. And, you know, I've said this for a while with a lot of these medical insurers is that, you know, Obamacare was basically written by them, and it allowed them to expand profits dramatically. But we know that that just was never a system that was sustainable in earnings this year. It's supposed to be down 38% from a high of $26.10 last year, all-time high. And so what are you going to pay for something that has negative earnings momentum? So on $16 in earnings, it's at still $280 per share. Okay, so and that's still a high teens multiple, a market multiple for negatively inflecting earnings growth, regulatory overhang, and terrible momentum, right? It's at a 52-week low now. Relative strength is at 10. And frankly, if I zoom out to a monthly chart, you know, really doesn't get good support until around the 230 mark. It's at 280 now. So, you know, we might be getting there, but I just don't see any reason to step in front of this. Why are you going to try to catch a falling knife? That's a proverbial falling knife here. And you don't know where those regulatory issues are going to land. And so, especially when we're in a more populist environment, right, where it's less about, you know, profits for corporations and it's more about how do you support the average person, and both sides of the aisle have their method to their madness of how to do that. But I ultimately think that you will get some sort of single payer, Medicare for all type of a system that will greatly reduce the market share and market potential for a lot of these medical insurers. And so they just have been names that we haven't touched for a while. And, you know, for a while we looked kind of dumb because they kept going higher. But I said, if you go back to my calls in 2020, 2021, you know, I just didn't love these type of names because of that regulatory overhang that I knew would probably change at some point. And now it certainly is inflecting that way. And so while, you know, now it's down from over nearly $570 per share, roughly, all the way down to 280. And I think it's headed lower. So I would pass on it. I think you have much better risk versus rewards out there as opposed to trying to catch this falling knife. Thanks for the call. Now we have time for one more question from the InvestTalk Voice Bank that came in earlier on 888-99 chart.
Hi there. This is Ralph from Chicago. I was calling about 3M. I bought it around $100. It's kind of surged since then. I was wondering if this is a good time to take profits or hold on for the long term. Thank you.
All right, looking at 3M, and they had some lawsuit issues. They seem to be resolved somewhat, and it certainly gained pretty nice momentum. Its low back in 2023 was around $70. Now we're at $137, so it's nearly doubled. And it is into some resistance, though, between here and call it 145. So you're in that resistance zone. Earnings are supposed to be $788 next year. $137 stock, you know, I think it's a bit rich after this move. Because what are you going to pay? You're going to pay a 20 multiple for modest earnings growth? I just don't see it. I just don't see any reason to jump on it at these levels. So I do see a lot of overhead resistance. I see a valuation that just does not look that great after this. Move. So I would be trimming it and having a trailing stop. And I would use the 50-day moving average for that trailing stop. If it goes below that, sell the rest. Thanks for the call. Well, that about does it. I'm Justin Klein. It's another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening. And we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And please remember, our wealth webinar is coming up 1 week from today on ways to enhance your retirement savings and effective strategies for managing your 401k. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.